You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Thanks for selling your car to Carvana. Here's your check.
Whoa, when did I get here?
What do you mean?
I swear it was just moments ago that I accepted a great offer from Carvana online. I must have time traveled to the future.
It was just moments ago. We do same day pickup. Here's your check for that great offer.
It is the future.
It's the present and just the convenience of Carvana. Sorry to blow your mind.
It's all good. It happens all the time.
Sell your car the convenient way to
Carvana.
Pickup times may vary and fees may apply.
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
And joining me on the podcast and on video, it's Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You're Alan.
I'm very good, Justin. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right, you know. I haven't got much of a tan from Tenerife because...
Well, you have. You have from here. You're a lot better than me, mate.
That's makeup for the video. it was a bit cloudy, but it was warm. That's the main thing. It didn't rain. That's the thing, you know. Yeah. I mean, I hate rain. Mm. I don't mind if it's over here. If it's like today, actually, it's a little bit cloudy, but it's not raining. That's the main thing, isn't it? So,
still quite nice, warm. Still a bit nippy though. It's the air hasn't really warmed up yet. It's you kind of feel that we're not quite there. Yeah, it should be in summer, but we're not.
Yeah, I just wish they'd improve the speed of travel on planes. Just so we can get there in half an hour or something, you know. But because. Did you hear that thing actually a while back? Is it Singapore Airlines, wasn't it? From London to Singapore, that horrendous turbulence they had.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw that. Someone said it was due to climate change. I thought, if more of that's going to happen, and if it does happen, that'll have massive implications for the travel industry and planes, hotels, everything. So I don't know about you, but I don't fancy going on planes that drop 6,000 feet in a couple of seconds and have people hitting the ceilings and all that stuff. I did keep my seatbelt on. I know they said keep your seatbelt on, whatever happens, unless you're in the toilet. I did keep my seatbelt on just in case.
Well, the thing is, I mean, climate change, it's such an easy thing to play the blame game with. But at the end of it, if you travel to tropical destinations and you're flying over hot territory, you're going to get currents of air moving upwards and air moving downwards. Those anomalies have always taken place, but we've got more air traffic now than ever before. So the chances of somebody hitting those air pockets is greater than ever. I don't subscribe to the whole climate change thing as regards air travel. If you're flying in tropical climate, then you're going to get greater movement of air. It stands to reason.
But also, what you just said there about the amount of travel that goes on, you're going to have one or two planes, have issues with turbulence, it's like thousands of and we don't hear of it very often, so
it happens all the time. It's just because of the this was a particularly severe episode. You're now, I think about a week later, there was a flight down to South America. There was a big turbulence there, and passengers were sort of thrown around. But frankly, if as you did, you keep your seatbelt on during the flight, then you'll be okay, because in the air, that happens, and aircraft are designed to deal with that sort of turbulence. The airframes are built to withstand that.
Yeah, and of course, it could have been just the pilot just falling asleep, knocking the joystick forward, and of course, he just blamed turbulence, didn't he? Oh, sorry, turbulence. That's blame on turbulence.
No, everyone. No, that doesn't. Well, That might have happened on the old DC-3 analog airliner, but nowadays he just presses a button, autopilot's on, and it doesn't matter if he falls asleep and falls into the joystick or not. You know, the autopilot will just correct.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Let's have a quick little aim all share the hair screen. It's rolled over a little bit. It's you know, but nevertheless, it's all right. You know, we're gonna have that.
Yeah.
After a big rally, it's gonna roll over a bit.
It's never gonna go up in a straight line.
Yeah, exactly. So they may have to go sideways a little bit. Maybe around this 785 level, all that. But the markets are not, you know, particularly. In fact, the markets are pretty much all down today. I mean, all this stock exchange. I think that, that's the rise. Oh, there we are, on this side, left here.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, 0.25% for FTSE, 250 is 0.34%, FTSE sweeping, and AIM is down 0.5%, pretty much. But Hargreaves Lansdown is down, rallying nicely there, Rentokil down, biggest fall of there. But, I think we've had this sort of, like the ECB last week, didn't we, reduced interest rates first time, was it like 5 years? No, the first time in four, 3 years, 2 years, I don't know what it
was. Yeah.
But a 0.25%. And so I think, you know, with the Bank of England and the Fed are behind, but it's going to happen, you know, maybe one this year, maybe two, who knows, but it's going to happen, and that'll help the markets a lot. So
it's going to happen. The markets can stabilize. We're going to go back to sort of, closer to where we were beforehand, because we had this unprecedented period of zero interest rate. And now we're paying interest on money borrowed, and that's how it should be. So
and it's
as you can see there,
look at that. But that was an unprecedented time. You know, the length that interest rates were zero never happened before. Never been that long where it's been zero. No. So you had a lot of stocks that are pre-revenue, loss-making stocks, rallied like hell because raising money wasn't an issue because there was nowhere else to put your money apart from the market. I think it's going to change. I think the new normal will come where. I don't know, interest rates will be at, 2.5-3% maybe, but I don't think they'll ever go down to, unless you have, you know, major problems. Right, I can't see it ever going back to where it was, you know, 10 years. It's almost like the central banks fuel this boom and bust. You know, they ratchet up interest rates now, and largely that was down to inflation and also money printing, which is down to them. They go from one extreme to another. It's really sensible, measured, you know, custodians of our system, financial system. But it's over one extreme to the other. And I think even now, as you start, 0.25%, just, you know, bring it down a little bit. We all know it's lagged, you know, the effects of what they do,
their
policies.
Yeah.
So if anything now, they shouldn't just keep up higher for longer and wait until they see something happen, because we know this has been lagged. It'll take a while for this to wash through. So even now, I think they should be thinking about, you know, bring it down 0.25%, see what happens. Because it's almost as if once they start in one direction, they don't seem to stop. You know, so it seems a bit extreme considering they are supposed to be, you know, sensible custodians of our financial system. They don't seem to be. They seem like, you know, inflation itself is a bit self-correcting anyway. You get inflation, people spend less.
I think the custodians, you know, they've overseen a boom and bust scenario in the past, and I think they're anxious to avoid that at all costs. So, if anything, they're probably being overly cautious, and that in itself isn't a bad thing because, you know, by the time the rates do come down, then the economy is more than ready and able to cope with it, and that's important. You know, we want to see careful management and prudent management, and you know, possibly some people in government might say, those interest rates should be coming down now in order to win votes. Well, no, let's bring them down at the right time. The Bank of England did say they anticipated rates dropping this year. So we're only in June. We've got a long way to go. So a couple of rate falls by the end of the year, I think, would do fine.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Stocks, what are you looking at?
Okay. Well, talking about license to print money, want to talk about Ramsden's Holdings, first of all?
I like Ramsden's. I covered these in the webinar last week because they're interim. Transparency. I own a little bit of stock in this, not a lot, not at all, but I do like them. And and it's an area of the market. I think, in fact, let's get up there. They're one of these companies on my microcap league that score highly in every metric, okay, apart from momentum. That means the chart. Now, if you look at, I think there's a video coming out on this next few days from my webinar, but there's a little seller in there, and that's the idea holding it back. Everything else is fine, dividend, nice dividend, a good area of the market, very well diversified. Anyway, crack on, Al, sorry.
I think it's, I think the seller is Close Brothers, if I am correct. There was a TR1 recently where reduce their holding slightly. But as can be seen, I mean, this company started in 2001 with just three stores. Peter Kenyon, of course, the CEO, has been there pretty much since the outset. The company grew via acquisition. The business was primarily driven by gold buying. So, of course, people would go and sell their gold. The company would then make a profit on that gold. All the way through to 2013, where the company has 120 stores. And then, of course, gold crashed. There was that big crash in 2013. And what that did, it triggered diversification in the company. And, of course, the company came to market in 2016. So it's been on name now for 7 years. It now offers four key revenue generators. It has a foreign exchange business, pawnbroking loan business. It continues to buy precious metals, and it's now has a large chain of secondhand and new jewelry stores. And this is it's a big cash generator, this company. It really is. And we had a very strong set of interim results, which were published last week from the company. Pre-tax or profit before tax up 8% to 4 million quid. Revenues up 12% to 43.8 million quid. Really strong performance. And this is a company with a market capitalization of just 64 million. So there's very little premium in there, really, for growth. Across the business, the jewellery retail was steady, rose 1% to 17.5 million. Pawnbroking loan book grew by 12% to just under 11 million. 3% gain on Forex to 5 million. But the gross profit on precious metal purchases rose by 25%, also to 5 million. Obviously a lot to do with the metals prices that we've seen over this period. But the group are really...
And I can't see that coming down. Do you know what? Gold price, by the way, with interest rates, like you say, coming down, gold is like the rally. So this is a strong part of their business. And you tend to get, like I said, you see all these adverts, for we'll buy your gold when the gold price is high. And people do respond. They look around the house for, old jewellery they don't wear, and they take them in and sell them. And so I think for a long time, it's going to be a buoyant part of the what I quite like about it is it's diversified. So you've got, the gold selling and the pawnbroking pretty much is almost for tough times. But also you've got the other side of it where people are, buying secondhand jewellery and watches and all this stuff as well for good times. So, and foreign exchange for good times. So,
and foreign exchange business. So theoretically, overseas buyers can come to the store and, they can sell their jewellery and perhaps receive the money back through the foreign exchange business in euros or whatever they want. So there are many ways for this company to make money, and they are really coining it in. They're calling in enough to continue to grow the business. During the period, six new stores in Poole, Romford, Burnley, Blackburn, Cardiff, and a franchise store in Bury. They've now got 167 stores around the country. That's a big business to support. Also, the current period, second half of the year, is trading in line. They're going to be opening another new store up in Telford, and also launching to further drive the online business, so dedicated pawnbroking and gold buying websites. So those will be out in the coming months. So it's a really, really strong business model. I think Peter Kenyon and his team have done a great job here. So I'm guessing, where do they go from here? Perhaps they look overseas. Who knows?
Well, do you know what? If you look at the footprint, they're largely, there's a bigger player in the market. There's more pawnbroking there. It's not as diversified as H&T, but they're more down the south. Now, Ramsden's are so north. They're creeping down slowly. They're across in Wales as well. But they are buying stores now in the south. So they are, I quite like they are, playing in H&T's backyard. I think, do you know what? I think H&T could probably take these out if they're becoming too much of a threat. Because we often talk about AIM companies, and AIM gets a bad name for companies that are, just generally loss-making, companies just raise money constantly. And the people overlook good businesses. And this is a good business. It's generating cash. It's paid a 5.2% dividend. They just increased the interim dividend by 9%. And it's one of the things that literally they know exactly. I was listening to, Peter, an interview with Peter, and he's a big shareholder, CEO. And he said there's about over 360, 330 towns that'll support them, size towns with a good sort of little town centres and like that'll support them. They're at 167 stores right now. It's almost doubling their footprint. They can do that. And what I like is they've been doing this for a while now. They know exactly where it'll work, won't it work. Yeah. It's almost like that cliched, cookie cutter operation. As long as they've got the right location, and they take their time over it. There's one location they mentioned recently. They're waiting for 18 months. They knew exactly where they wanted one in a store, and they waited 18 months, and they got it in the end. And so eventually you get the right locations. But he says there are 330 around that, the viable locations in the UK. And so these stores are pretty much profitable after in year two, year three. Yeah. And I just think it's nice. It'll never knock the lights out. You never see it shoot up overnight. But it's one of those companies that, 5% dividend a year, and the share price will slowly creep up over the years. And before you know it, in 2-3 years down the line, you're almost 100% up probably, plus dividends and all that stuff, or maybe 4 or 5 years, 100% up. And it's one of those ones that has a lovely, great business on AIM that's almost overlooked by people who, tarring with the brush, it's all rubbish companies. This is a cracking bit. Like I said, if you look at that, total scores on everything is in the green, apart from momentum. And if you look at the chart, it's had this it rose up here towards the full year results last year, and then came back down, and now we are seeing a series of lower highs, of lower lows. Now though we're getting a higher low, which starts first before a higher high kicks in. So I think if it clears this £2.07, £2.10 area, I think it's back into an uptrend, and that means probably the seller is going to be cleared, and sometimes
well,
when
I
you
think
get
the
seller.
I think the seller's an institution, so that's fine, and that's just normal churn. I don't think there's any...
I see that as an opportunity, because they're suppressing the price. Once they stop selling, it'll pop, a great little business, I think. So
indeed. No. And also, you mentioned the dividend there, just of course, the dividend rose, they grew the dividend
9%
by 9% to 3.6p, on the interim period. So that's it's a really strong company and a real cash cow of a company too. And this is the sort of business, the sort of cash generative business that makes a great investment over the medium to longer term and will certainly beat inflation.
Yeah. Well, I hold, that's what I like. No, I like because I hold. What do I hold because I like? I don't know. I hold them because I like them.
You like to hold, Jess, yeah.
So I'm not saying I like them, I just can hold them. The reason why I bought them is I like that. So it was one of these great little businesses, a cracking little business, cash generative, and it's like I said, and they can keep plodding on nicely for years, opening these stores and doing what they do very well. Anyway, what's next, Al?
Okay. We spoke a few weeks back about Brave Bison. Fantastic name for a company. I love it. So the Brave Bison. But Brave Bison, as viewers will know, have been on a mission, or rather they've been trying to acquire a mission.
Oh, I like that. Yes, very good, Al. Very good.
You see what I did there, yeah?
Yeah, just about, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So Brave Bison are a digital advertising technology services company. The business really changed a few years ago when they bought Social Chain, a company that creates content for social media platforms. They also work with influencers to drive the business. So if you go to them and you have a brand, they have a complete... A to Z series of tools that will drive your business online. They have the performance arm, which plans and buys media across platforms like Google, TikTok, and so on. Social Chain, I've already mentioned. Brave Bison Commerce, which builds the platforms to help companies generate the cash from their investments. And then, of course, also the Brave Bison Media Network, where they have their own portfolio of channels across YouTube, Facebook, Snapchat, TikTok, Instagram, and others, with well over 1 billion monthly users. So go back to the last set of results. We saw a very strong performance announced earlier this year. Turnover up 13% to 36 million. Net revenues, gross profits up 23% to 21 million. EBITDA up 42% to 4.3 million. And net cash also up 10% to just under 7 million. Very strong trading in the current year. So the next trading update, I'm sure, will be more of the same. Then, of course, in May this year, they put an offer in for Mission Group. Now, Brave Bison has no debt. It has cash of just under $7 million. Mission Group, on the other hand, has $30 million of debt. And it sees potential with an enlarged group putting the companies together to create revenues of well in excess of $130-140 million a year. And of course, it also said at the time it made the offer that it believed the mission levels of debt were unsustainable given the amount of business the company is currently writing. One of Mission's major shareholders, D-Bay, said the offer was very unattractive, but since then they have sold down a little bit, so that might tell you something. Michael Ashcroft also increased his shareholding in Brave Bison at the time from 20% to 23.7%, which also tells its own story. But as we know, Mission Group have rejected the offer outright. Brave Bison then put in an improved offer, which equated, I mean, if we look at Mission Group at the moment, shares are trading at 25p. They've come back down since Mission rejected the offer.
I know.
So they have all this debt. They had an offer of 35 pence per share, you know, which I think as a management team, you could turn around and say, okay, well, this is good. We see potential to, there are synergies with the product offerings from both companies that can deliver exponential growth. You know, there's a real opportunity here. But of course, I actually think this is just a matter of pride. And I think Mission Group didn't like being approached with an unsolicited offer. Perhaps if conversations had gone on behind the scenes, then they could have announced it together. But of course, that didn't happen. So maybe Brave Bison needs to rethink that. But the Brave Bison said it's disappointed, it's walking away because the management at Mission Group have chosen not to engage with them. They've chosen not to provide any details of management accounts or anything at all. So they've walked away. I don't think the story's over, though. Something tells me that, you know, the economies of scale this would generate, the synergies between the two are worth re-examining. And I'm sure Mission Group shareholders may well be speaking with the board, and perhaps even calling an EGM to discuss this further. So watch this space. We often see with M&A activity like this that, you know, there's the initial flurry, if you like, of activity, the initial bombardment, and then everything settles down, and perhaps there's a phony war period, and then everything else starts getting in earnest. So I wouldn't be surprised to see this little episode reignite.
Do you know what? If I was a Brave Bison, I'd count myself lucky. I'd walk away from that. Net debt of 24 million is like nuts. If I was Mission Group, I'd bite their hand off.
Well, exactly.
I don't see how they're going to get out of their holes.
And I think this is a pride issue. I think management have just said, how dare they? How dare they make an unsolicited approach to our company? This is shocking. We can't have this. And they've just refused to engage, which is nuts.
Their net debt is equal to their market cap. And literally, I don't see how they're going to get out of the hole, because if you look at the interim statement, the interims, the amount that they're paying on that debt is ridiculous. It's turning over 41. Okay, it's 11%. But, the reported profit is 100 grand after, you know, paying off all. Mm. It's just ridiculous. I think they should bite Brave Bison's paw off.
Well, I think you've got to give the Brave Bison guys some credit, because they've delivered us a really stonking performance over the past year. You know, certainly the last set of results, you know, they've grown the net cash that the company has. So if it just carries on doing what it's doing, it's going to be in a stronger position, have a bigger war chest and so on. So maybe it can go back with another improved offer. But they obviously saw something at Mission Group. Perhaps it was just the clients. Perhaps it was a particular product set.
I can't see what they saw in it. I don't know. I'd be worried about Brave Bison taking on that much debt. I'm surprised the share price hasn't gone up today, because I think there's a lot of debt to take on that.
Well, exactly. And that's what tells me this isn't over, because I think if it had been, you know, if the coup de grace had been delivered, then perhaps we would have seen the share price ping back up, and perhaps as a trading statement from Brave Bison just to reassure shareholders. Yep, okay, that episode is now over, but hey, we're having a really, really good time here. Full trading statement will be issued shortly, but happy to say that we are trading in line with our expectations. Something like that would have would have been good. That hasn't happened. So who knows? You know, there's a but the group had a plan. They went in with a plan. They saw an opportunity. They saw an opportunity to create synergies, to create growth, to create a much bigger business. And when you've got that sort of resource, mission groups got offices around the world. When you've got an opportunity to put all those resources together, then you can accelerate growth. And that was the plan. And who knows? It may still happen.
Yeah, I think maybe with the cost of debt maybe coming down in the future, maybe they see it that way as well. Cost of servicing that debt will become less expensive. But all right, what's next now?
Okay, well, we're going to talk about a mining and resource stock now, which I've covered sort of a number of times previously. This is a company called Blenkow Resources. BRES is the Epic code. This company is London listed. It was a reverse takeover a few years ago where African Consolidated Resources reversed into a shell. And the company owns 100% owns the Orem Cross Graphite project in Uganda. And keeping a close eye on the company all the way through its inception. They discovered large plate graphite. They have a huge license area, some 2,000 hectares. It's a big old area. And they discovered high grade graphite on an area that I think is about 1% of the total license area. So there's real opportunity to upscale this. Fast forward a couple of years, and the company have secured a loan from the US government, a non-dilutive loan, $5 million loan, which they're receiving through in tranches. And this is to develop the project, to test the product. They have been in China. Mike Ralston and his team have been in China testing the product, testing whether it's up to spec for batteries, whether it's the spherical graphite is up to spec to be used for all the different applications, and it's passed the tests with flying colours. The company is also well funded. It raised $400,000 at 5p back in February, and a further $2.5 million from a strategic investor based in Africa. So the company is well funded, has no need of funding, and as I say, it also has this development loan from the US DFC, and it's receiving this money through. Fast forward through to today, I interviewed Mike Ralston. That interview was released this morning, and the company have announced their first offtake agreement with Jilin, the Chinese company Jilin, to basically purchase many tons of flake graphite per annum. In the commentary, the executive chairman Cameron Pierce said that this is the first of many. And I think we can expect a series of offtake agreements to be announced in the coming months. In the interview with Mike, we also discuss what's happening with the actual plant. They're constructing a pilot plant at Orem Cross, and that pilot plant they expect to be operating probably about a year and a half from now, so probably early 2026. But from where they've come from, and I think you can see in the series of events that have unfolded to date, this is how a mine should be developed, how it should be brought to market, how a mining company evolves from a tiny explorer into a company that's producing a graphite project, which will obviously be selling all over the world in the future. So a real landmark achievement for the company today. Shares currently trading at 5.7p. They're only up 3% on the news. I think given the time they spent in China, the Jilin offtake agreement wasn't entirely a surprise. But I think we're going to see a lot more movement in the coming months when we hear about these further offtake agreements and, of course, construction of the plant. I will declare an interest here. I'm a shareholder in Blenkow. It's certainly a very steady performer, not a spectacular performer, but we've seen a decent move in the share price. The shares were trading back around 3.9p in March, and we're back up to 5.7p now. So expecting it to progress from here steadily, I would imagine. But the company has a market cap of just 12.4 million. So you know, very modest, I think, considering where the company is, and also the fact that it has these strategic partners in place, both the offtake partners and also, of course, the grant funding from the U.S. International Development Finance Corporation.
Very nice chart. They need to close above that. Well, 6 pence, really. If we can close above that, it's a good sign. It's not done that for a few, well, since early May. It closed there at 6 pence. But if we close above that, that'd be a good sign. Marvellous. Yeah, it's almost, you know, EVs at the moment. Soon got, I mean, they, of course, in practice, they haven't got off the ball because it's only going one way. Yeah. But you do see a lot of negative press towards them, or people say they're not, you know, buying them anymore. And stuff. But I think they'll back. I think it didn't help that you know, Rishi Sunak pushed out the date at which you need to change your car to 2035, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. And so from 2030. So because you know what, on a personal level, we're going to buy an EV, and then they pushed that date out, and we didn't.
Yeah,
because we've got plenty of time now.
Well, on a personal level, just we own a Skoda, an electric Skoda Enyaq, and it's fantastic. It's a great car. It's, you know, better range at this time of year. You know, if it's about 18 degrees, that's the optimum temperature, about range of about 260 miles, I guess. But really lovely car, you know, just plug and play. It's so efficient. And, you know, I have a Hive app on my phone. We have a charger at the house, so I can see, you know, we'll plug it in on smart charge. So charge the car up. It's about 13 quid, smart charge at night. So, you know, they're very cheap to run. Yeah, the initial purchase cost is high, and I'm guessing we're going to see depreciation at the outset. But I think we're seeing the next iteration of vehicles coming through. And now we're seeing vehicles with longer range and, you know, batteries that will last for longer. And I think eventually we're going to get to a stage where you'll quickly recharge your battery and you'll be able to drive for 500 miles. And at that point, you know, that's what EV technology should be delivering, you know, because that really, I think, that then just provides an unassailable argument to own an EV.
Yeah, but I think that, you know, BYD, these Chinese producers, they bring the cost down. Mm. People will mind it. People don't want to spend. People would like to be able to afford maybe a second car that's an EV, that's the runaround, because I think it's like 90% of the journeys are less than 5 miles, you know, so that's fine. But it's having to spend like, you know, 50 grand on a car that can't take you, you know, to the long journeys. So for a second car, it's perfect, isn't it? You know, because you don't do big journeys. It's as simple as that. Most of them aren't. So,
I think
the price goes down, people will buy them a bit more.
There was a very attractive offers, you know, for companies considering buying EVs and all the rest of it. So the tax structures are attractive. You know, you get good benefit and kind back, you know, as a director or an employee. So there are some good perks to owning a vehicle. And I think, I mean, I'm still, as you know, I'm a petrol head. I love my motorbikes and all the rest of it. And we still have. We've got an old diesel Audi, which is a great car, and you know, it'll do 600 miles on a tank. And if we're traveling anywhere, that's the one we'll use. But for everyday stuff, you know, when you're just jumping in and out of the car, of course, you don't have to wait for the engine to warm up anyway in a modern vehicle. But you know, you just jump straight in, you drive it, and if you're sitting in traffic, of course, the engine's not moving, so you're not using electricity. You know, it's
But the thing is, you know what? Owning that Audi, as long as it's environmentally friendly and it's been tested and all that stuff, the best thing you can do for the environment is not to change your car. Because when you buy a new car, there's so much, you know, energy goes into that. There's so much emissions go into creating a car. You know, the most environmental thing you can do is actually keep your car. All the plastics get made. So they don't tell you that, but as long as your car is not, you know, coughing out lots of dirt and muck and all that, so it's well, in fact, just one car, not a problem. But they said the worst thing to do is renewing stuff all the time, new stuff all the time. That's the worst thing for the planet. I applaud you. I'll keep that Audi. How old is the Audi?
Oh, well, the Audi's 2008. It's a very old one. It's done 160,000 miles. It's a big V6 3-liter diesel, and it doesn't use a drop of oil. It's a fantastic engine. So I've had it for years, and I'm going to keep owning it for years because it does everything I want. You know, what's the point?
Exactly. On bikes, quickly, have you looked at any electric bikes or anything like that, or don't fancy that?
That's an interesting point. I haven't Yeah, I mean, there are some. There is actually, I think, going back to the point about the way we use cars, you know, just to run down to the shops. There's a British company called Maving, M-A-E-V-I-N-G, that produces what I think is a really nice looking electric motorcycle. It's got a range of about 45 miles or 80 miles. You know, it's designed for city use, but it's actually a really stylish little bike. So if I lived in a city, that's what I get. It would be a no-brainer. Or I guess I should get a push bike, really, because it's better for keeping you fit. So there are some really good bikes on the market now, some innovative bikes, and that sector is growing. And also you have, I've been watching the Isle of Man TT last week, some fantastic racing there. And of course you have the TT Zero, which is the electric race and all the rest of it. So electric bikes very much come to the fore, but they're probably behind the curve in a sense compared to electric cars. But they will be here. They're all part and parcel of it.
Oh, yeah, it's impending. It's coming. It's like a wave. It'll get bigger. Marvel stuff. Thanks, Al. Speak to you next week.
Cheers, Justin. This week.
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.